fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the June 5th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. The Miami Heat beat the Denver Nuggets Sunday night 111-108 to even the best of seven National Basketball Association finals at one game each. The AP's Bruce Morton reports from Denver, Colorado.
The finals stand at 1-1. This after Miami survived a topsy-turvy night to defeat Denver 111-108. Gabe Vincent was team high for the Heat with 23.
It's part of our DNA, for one. You know, everyone on this team has battled through adversity in some manner and been knocked down and had to get back up. And for number two, we got a lot of experience in these close games. So when it comes down to the wire, we're strangely comfortable.
Miami blew an 11-point lead, then overcame a 15-point deficit before taking control and hanging on in the fourth quarter. Game three is Wednesday night in Miami. Bruce Morton, Denver.
Thanks, Bruce. Serbian big man Nikola Jokic scored a game-high 41 points in Game 2. Jokic comments on the Nuggets losing their first home game in the 2023 NBA playoffs.
Didn't want it to happen, of course, but it happened, so we're going to live with it. We're going to Miami to play another game.
Meanwhile, Denver's head coach, Michael Malone, says on Sunday night, the better team won.
I asked that player, you guys tell me why we lost. And they knew the answer. Miami came in here and outworked us. And we were by far our least disciplined game of these 16 or 17 playoff games, whatever it is now.
Once again, the NBA Finals resume Wednesday night in Miami, Florida, where the Miami Heat will host the Denver Nuggets. The championship series is tied at one game each.
Sporty greetings. This is Masai Ujiri, the president of Toronto Raptors Basketball, president of Giants of Africa Foundation. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Prince Nesta joins us once again with a look at the weekend highlights in European club football. Sporty greetings, Prince.
Sporty greetings to you too, Sonny. Manchester City beat their arch rivals Manchester United 2-1 to win their 7th FA Cup in a match that was played at Wembley Stadium. The Citizens are now in the chase for a historic treble and will need to beat Inter Milan in Saturday's Champions League final to become only the second English team to do the treble. The Red Devils are the only other team to have secured the treble in the 1998-1999 season under Sir Alex Ferguson. City manager Pep Guardiola also happens to have led Barcelona to a treble during the 2008-2009 season, reacted to his team's performance.
I think in general we played a really, really good game. We played with a lot of risk because the threat they have at front is so big, especially Rashford. But we controlled really well. First half we missed to attack a little bit for the right and left with Kyle. Manu Akanji was a little bit better. Second half was much better. Helped us a lot as well. I scored early in the second half. A final against United always is, for many reasons, difficult, and the better team won. So we were humble enough to accept how good they are, and we did it, and really pleased because win the FA Cup, the emotions are so special, and celebrated with our people. So it's really, really great.
Ilkay Gundogan, who scored a double during the match, also shared his thoughts on the match.
Not really, to be honest. It's just preparing yourself as good as possible, you know, for the next challenge. And we knew that we have a big final now coming up, you know, first of two. And obviously, with having it here at Wembley is always special. On top of that, playing against your biggest rival, you know, in a derby, I think it's very, very special for our supporters, for our fans. So we were pretty much looking forward to it, and I think we've enjoyed it from the start. I think we played a really good first half, even though we knew at halftime that we could have done better. And I think that's exactly what we have done. We played really well, find the right spaces, scored, thankfully, one goal, didn't concede. And that won us the game at the end.
United manager Erik ten Hag also shared his thoughts on the match.
First of all, I want to congratulate City with the win of the FA Cup. But as you say, I think it was very narrow. I think it was head-to-head. We played very competitive from out of a very good organisation. We didn't allow them out from open play against probably the best team in the world in this moment. We fought back after a quick goal down, and I think we are the only team in the world who is capable of fighting back against this team from City. So yeah, I was happy with the performance of my team.
That's Manchester United manager Erik ten Hag discussing his team's FA Cup loss against Manchester City at Wembley. Moving on to the Women's Champions League final, Spanish footballer Patrick Guijarro and her Swedish counterpart Fridolina Rojo both netted to help Barcelona beat Wolfsburg 3-2 in the Women's Champions League finals match played at the Philips Stadion in the Netherlands. Wolfsburg looked set to cause an upset after goals from Polish striker Iwa Pajor and Alexandra Pop gave them a 2-0 halftime lead, but Baka Femini rallied to pull off a second-half comeback victory. He is Firmino's coach Jonathan Giraldes discussing his team's win.
It's an amazing feeling I have right now. It's difficult to explain with the exact words to what about feel right now, because it's an important trophy for us, and the way we did is the most important thing, because it's not talking only about tactical position, the physical condition. Sometimes the personality that we show today was really, really important to win the game. I think two amazing teams competing at the high level, and thanks to the supporters that come to the stadium to give us the support, today was a fantastic day, and I am happy, of course. When we were attacking the first half, I think everything fine, but the last meter we had to be a little more aggressive and be on the place to push the ball, you know, on the net. And for me, not just the result in the first half, because I think we deserve a lot, and 2-0 the first half was hard for us, and after we have to give a good reaction with improving the tactical position and giving as well the opportunity to the players to show the personality they have, and the second half we did it, so fantastic.
That's Barcelona Femini's coach Jonathan Giraldes after his team's Women's Champions League finals comeback win against Wolfsburg cemented their status as the queens of European soccer. Moving on to the Spanish La Liga, French star of Algerian descent Karim Benzema ended his Real Madrid career by scoring to secure a 1-1 draw against Atletico Bilbao at the Bernabeu. The 35-year-old spent 14 seasons at the club, scoring 354 goals in 648 appearances. The 2022 Ballon d'Or winner also won 25 trophies, including 5 Champions League finals, wasn't the only one leaving his team, Sonny. 7-time Ballon d'Or winner Lionel Messi and Spanish defender Sergio Ramos both played their final games for French champions Paris Saint-Germain, who ended up losing 3-2 at home to Clermont. Ramos and French star of Cameroonian descent Kylian Mbappe all netted for the Parisians, while Messi missed several opportunities to add to his 32 goals in 75 games for the club. Mbappe's goal also helped him secure a 5th successive Golden Boot award and is the only 4th player to finish top scorer in France 5 times, in a list which also includes Carlos Bianchi, Delio Onis and Jean-Pierre Papin. AC Milan's 41-year-old legendary striker Zlatan Ibrahimovic also hung his boots from football over the weekend. The Swedish hitman scored a total of 511 goals for the clubs he played for, including Paris Saint-Germain, Manchester United and both AC and Inter Milan. He won 34 trophies, including 14 league titles, and was also nominated for the Ballon d'Or 11 times. He also retires as Sweden's all-time top scorer with 62 international goals in 122 matches. Reporting for the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm Prince Nestor.
Thanks, Prince! You can follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook, Twitter,
Twitter, and at voaafrica.com. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. My Twitter handle is at VOA Sunny Sports. And if you go to voaafrica.com, you can listen online to the Sunny Side of Sports, as well as past episodes. Check out voaafrica.com.
Sporting greetings, this is Victor Osimhen, Super Eagles of Nigeria and Napoli FC forward. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Nigeria and Napoli international Victor Osimhen has been awarded Italy's Serie A Striker of the Year award. Victor set a record with 31 goals scored during the 2022-2023 season. For reaction, Iron Mike Mbonye contacted the chief football writer at ACLSports.com, Bisayo Dairo.
Well, the award as the best striker in the Italian Serie A season 2022-2023 is the least deserved or the least worthy of what Victor Osimhen deserves with the kind of phenomenal season he has had. Yes, he doesn't have the numbers as much as the likes of Harry Kane or Erling Haaland, but finishing as the top scorer in the Serie A and leading Napoli to their first title in 33 years thereabouts is worthy enough to be even named as the best player of the season. Of course, a lot of fans and pundits have argued that that award should have actually gone to Osimhen and not the striker of the year. But while in the absence of the most valuable player for the season, then I think that Victor Osimhen absolutely deserves to be named the top striker of the season, because come to think of it, he is a top marksman. He has scored many game-deciding goals for his team Napoli, and he is absolutely one of the main reasons that Napoli are celebrating a league title on Sunday night.
With 31 goals in the season and 50 goals as the highest scoring African in Serie A, do you think Osimhen will increase his goals tally if he remains in Serie A?
You know, the very good thing about Victor Osimhen is that the young man is a player on the rise. He's not yet the finished article. He's still 24, so wherever he finds himself next season, Victor Osimhen will bang any goals. And guess what? If he remains in Italy, be very sure that he'll score more than 30 goals next season. Why? Because in his first season in the Serie A, he scored just 10 goals in a season hampered by injuries. The second season, last year, he scored 14 goals. And despite missing as much as 6 games this season, he has scored 26 goals. I tell you, next season, if Osimhen remains in Italy, then we are looking at him scoring around 30, 35 goals. That is the trajectory he's following. He's born to score goals. He's born to break records. You know, he has the record of the highest goal scored by an individual at the FIFA Under-17 World Cup level, which he achieved with Nigeria in 2015. And now he has grown in leaps and bounds ever since then. So, like I said, he's still developing, he's still maturing. He's scoring with his head, with his right foot, with his left. He's scoring difficult goals. He's scoring goals that are not expected of an attacker. So you get to see more of him. At this level, he's no more coming down. Even if he gets to have these injuries here and there because of his all-encompassing style of play, I'm very, very sure that wherever he lands, because he's obviously now a subject of transfer from many top European clubs, it's now a matter of if they're going to be able to pay what Napoli wants. But wherever he finds himself next season, trust me, he will surely bank in the goals.
Fisayo, as an African football analyst, do you think it's advisable for Osimhen to change club or remain in Serie A?
Well, if you ask me, not just as an African sports pundit, but as a football fan and lover, I will easily advise Victor Osimhen to aspire for bigger challenges next season. No disrespect to the Italian Serie A, no disrespect to SSC Napoli, they're a big club and a big league. But I think having had 3 successful seasons at the club, it's time to move on to bigger things. He started slow, his first season 10 league goals, injury ravaged, moving on to 14 in the second season. And now he has shot himself to the top of the goalscorers chart in Italy in his third season, scoring 26 goals and winning the hugely coveted Capo Cannoniere, what is left there to achieve? And much more importantly, on a team level, he has delivered the first Italian League title for Napoli in over 30 years. What's more, he needs to move on to the big guns, to join the big leagues in Europe and the top players. And I have absolute confidence in his abilities that and his capabilities that he can achieve success anywhere he finds himself. So maybe this time to go to England, I'm very sure he's not short of offers from the top clubs in England, Spain, and even France, PSG, from France where he came to Napoli. It's time for him to move. And a lot of Nigerians see him as the man to break the duck of not winning the African Football of the Year. No Nigerian has achieved that in over 24 years now. So this is the time for Osimhen to move higher, to rub shoulders with the biggest stars in world football. And I'm very, very sure that he will excel even at that stage.
That's Fisayo Dairo, the chief football writer at ACLSports.com. And Fisayo spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Lagos, Nigeria.
Sporty greetings. This is Fisayo Dairo, chief football writer at ACLSports.com. And you are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Samson Omale joins us now with a package of African athletics and African football news.
The Black Princesses of Ghana has won the maiden under-20 Wafu B tournament after defeating Nigeria's Falcons on penalty in Saturday's final in Kumasi. After a 1-1 draw at regulation time, both sides went into penalties, where Ghana under-20 girls won 3-1 after regulation time. In the third-place match played earlier, Burkina Faso beat Benin Republic 2-1 to become third-best team in the championships hosted by Ghana. The under-20 women's tournament was organized by the West African Football Union. Staying with football news, Al Ahly maintained their unbeaten home record against Wydad Casablanca in the CAF Champions League after triumphing 2-1 in the first leg of the final at the Cairo International Stadium on Sunday night. Al Ahly had never lost to Wydad at home in the competition. Coach Marcel Kohler's side will once again try to consolidate on the first leg victory of defeating the African champions when the two teams meet in the second leg clash on June the 11th. In Uganda, Vipers SC walked away from the 2022-2023 football season with a double after winning both the Uganda Premier League Cup and the Uganda Cup. The Kitende Bay side on Saturday beat Police FC 1-0 to win the Uganda Cup final held at the Akibwa Stadium in Lira. Milton Karisa scored the only goal of the game in the first half to hand coach Alex Isibirie a second successful Ugandan Cup title. And now to athletics. The Races Grand Prix, a World Athletics Continental Tour silver meeting, made a successful return on Saturday after a three-year hiatus. South African world record holder and two-time world champion Wade van Niekerk demonstrated he's getting back to his best form after winning the men's 400 meters A final in a meeting record of 44.21 seconds. Another African success saw world champion and world record holder Tobia Musson of Nigeria winning the women's 100 meters hurdles in the season's best of 12.57 seconds. Staying with athletics, world and Olympic 1,500 meters champion Faith Kipyegon said she was surprised to break and set the world record at this stage of the year. The two-time Olympic champion and mother of one delivered a sensational performance in Florence to set a new 1,500 meters world record of 3 minutes 49.11 seconds. The 29-year-old Kenyan says she plans to transition fully to 5,000 meters after the Paris Olympic Games next year.
I didn't expect to run a world record. I was looking forward to run a world lead, which was 3:54. But I didn't expect the world record. This just came as a surprise, and I really thank God.
I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Thanks, Larry. That's Larry London, a man who's always ready to cross musical borders.
Sporty greetings. I am Busisiwe Mokoena, South African sports journalist. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sport on the Voice of America. Do enjoy.
Papwa Sugalum. It's a name recognized by only the most fanatical golf fans. Papwa rose to prominence in the late 1950s when he won several international golf tournaments, the first African of color to achieve this. South Africa's white supremacist government, embarrassed by Papwa's achievements and his status as a symbol of the brutality of apartheid, did its best to crush his talents. Darren Taylor filed this feature from Johannesburg.
One of the most enduring and tragic images of the apartheid era is a photograph of Papwa Sugalum eating a sandwich in a car in the parking lot of the Durban Country Club. It's 1963, and he's leading the Natal Open ahead of 103 white golfers. But he isn't allowed into the clubhouse because of the color of his skin.
I met with a gentleman by the name of Retief Waltman that played with my dad in 1963. And Retief Waltman shared some stories about the tent area that was set aside for my dad in order for him to have his refreshments and change.
Papwa's son, Rajen, says the racist mistreatment didn't stop his father from winning the Open. In so doing, he became the first non-white person to win an event on the South African professional golf circuit. Later that year, Papwa participated in the country's Open Championship, finishing a close second to compatriot and International Golfing Hall of Famer, Gary Player.
My dad was a caddy, and you know, he learned his prowess around the golf course from being a caddy and for caddying for his white counterparts.
Papwa Sugalum was born in 1930 into a family of poor laborers on a sugar farm in the lush province of Natal. He'd watch golfers on a nearby course and imitate them, hitting stones with sticks of sugarcane. In the late 1950s, Papwa was caddying for South African golfer Graham Wolfe. Wolfe, impressed by his caddy's talent, arranged for him to try to qualify for the British, French, German and Dutch Open Championships.
That is where he excelled. When he won the Dutch Open in 1959, that was the first out of three in a period of 6 years. For anybody that looks at the Dutch Open trophy itself, they will see names like Bernard Langer, Severiano Ballesteros, and so on etched on that trophy. And having won the tournament and coming back to South Africa, it embarrassed the South African PGA. And more importantly, it was the British PGA that allowed my dad to play overseas before South Africa could accept him as a player.
In 1965, Papwa won the Natal Open for the second time, defeating his friend, Gary Player. Player and other white golfers were visibly upset when Papwa was forced to accept the trophy outside the Durban Country Club in the rain. He won national and international tournaments throughout the 1960s, raising the ire of the apartheid government. Golf journalist Selvan Naidu says it's tragic that Papwa's more recognized in international golfing circles than locally.
I don't think his story is told as readily as we want it to be told. Much of the older generation is very aware of the story and this tragic story of denial. What knows what would have happened, you know, if Papwa would have been discovered much earlier. He was discovered at 31 years old.
Naidu says Papwa Sugalum is far from the only lost black South African golfer.
People like Vincent Shabalala, Richard Mukhwarayane, Simon Cox and Shlapo. You know, these are the great names that we ought to be telling in the broad South African history so that our children remember these names and be able to take these names and allow themselves to be inspired to grow to greater heights, and so that hopefully we're able to produce that Tiger Woods that all of us want in South Africa.
Rajen says right now there's no chance of that happening because present-day golf authorities in the country and the African National Congress government have done little to develop golfers of color since apartheid ended almost 30 years ago.
At the height of apartheid, we produced far more playing professionals than we do now, and that is questionable. In the years that my dad won internationally, hasn't been a single person of color that has won in international tournaments subsequent to that.
He points out that golf is an expensive sport, yet the state refuses to fund clubs in underdeveloped areas and won't subsidize talented black players. Rajen says golf courses in townships are run down.
Unless you play on championship golf courses, only then are you able to produce a champion.
Since the fall of apartheid, says Naidu, South Africa's produced a long string of world-renowned golfers, including Ernie Els and Retief Goosen. The latest crop includes Louis Oosthuizen, Charles Schwartzel, and Brandon Grace. That's great and reason to be proud, says Naidu, but they're all white.
There's so few black professional golfers making it out, even in the South African tour. You know, golf's a hard game. It requires a lot of dedication and effort. You've got to put in the yards. Equally, we need government support. We need corporate support. We need individuals to come on board and see those kids from KwaMashu, Umlazi, Phoenix, Chatsworth, and so on come to the fore so that, you know, we develop. And equally, we need to see a transformation in the schools.
In 1970, South Africa's golf administrators finally gave in to pressure from apartheid's overlords, banning Papua from the country's golf courses. Denied opportunities to pursue the game he loved and excelled at, Papua faded into obscurity and into poverty. He died a few years later in his sleep at the young age of 48. Rajen says cause of death was never established, but, as far as he's concerned, Papua Sugalem died of a broken heart. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Thanks, Darren. In women's golf, American Rose Zhang made history Sunday when she became the first player in more than 70 years to win in her LPGA professional debut. The 20-year-old Zhang won the title at the America's Open in Jersey City, New Jersey, near New York City. Zhang defeated another American player, Jennifer Kupcho, with a par on the second playoff hole at Liberty National Golf Club. Zhang finished with a 9-under par total of 279. And she won a first-place prize of more than $412,000. Before turning professional, Zhang was the top amateur player in the USA. Finally, Tunisian tennis star Ans Jabeur advanced to the quarterfinals Monday at the French Open in Paris. Jabeur beat American Bernarda Pera in straight sets 6-3 and 6-1. This is the first time Jabeur has reached the last eight at the French Open. She's aiming for her first Grand Slam title after losing last year in the finals of Wimbledon and the U.S. Open. That wraps up the June 5th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in.
I get it.
I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the sunny side of sports.